Welcome, dear souls, to the Way of the Yogi discussion group. It's Sunday, December 11th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
And I'm Deborah Barclay.
And I'm Katie Mulligan.
And together we're producing this podcast as an act of devotion to the practice and philosophies of yoga and as an act of service to the yoga community. So we've had a lot of new things happening lately for all of us.
That's true.
Oh my goodness.
Awesome.
We have a new member in our group. I'd like to welcome Fiona.
Yeah.
Fiona, you want to say something? No, not yet.
She will inevitably. There we go.
Probably during the meditation portion.
Yeah.
And Katie is moving, getting married.
I'm getting married.
Wow.
Yes. And I'm changing careers. We can talk about that.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
That's
swoop. I'm sure that will definitely come into the conversation.
Yeah.
And I am hopefully getting ready to go to India.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. So lots of new beginnings for all of us.
Yes. It's exciting. Yay. I think 2012, there's just something about it. There's just so many new beginnings for so many people I know, even outside of our circle. So
true.
I think there's something maybe big happening with that sort of, I don't know.
All that Mayan calendar stuff, all the paradigm shift.
That I know nothing about, but I'm pretty sure there's something happening.
Yeah. Do you know about that?
There's a little bit. I mean, that's what I wear on my neck is the Mayan calendar. Yeah, that's what this is.
Okay, Susanna kind of knows.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about it. I just know that it's one of the most precise calendars, or it is the most precise calendar that we know of. And when did it come into being? I think I'm not even sure. It came into being in like the
a long time ago,
the 3000 something BC, and it ends abruptly on December 21st of 2012.
Oh.
And it just stops. So
they ran out of ink.
So it's December 21st of 2012.
Of 2012.
That would be such a shame.
The winter solstice.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that time is going to stop or that the world is going to come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the world as we know it.
Oh, so there's a shift, a huge shift.
A huge shift. And the thing is about shifts, though, if it's a paradigm shift, which is what I'm suspecting, then we may not even notice it happen.
Okay.
Because when a paradigm shifts, our entire perception of what's going on shifts with it.
Oh.
So we may not even know that we perceived any other way before that. It just, you know, it just happens. Yeah.
And takes us with it.
And takes us with it, yeah.
Kind of cool.
Kind of cool. Although I prefer to be asked beforehand.
Yeah,
but you know, that's
I'd like
okay.
to know. You know, be aware.
Well, I think we are being asked.
You know, you're probably right.
I think we're being asked very, very intensely in the times leading up to it. You know, which way we want that shift to go.
Yeah.
And we're making our choices. Yeah. We are, and I think, at least for the three of us, we're choosing some pretty darn good.
I think so.
Good paths.
Yeah.
I like that way of looking at it.
I mean, that's just my own kind of take on it. But yeah.
What do other people have, like, other views on it?
Oh, there's, like, apocalyptic views, and there's, you know,
all
the world is Armageddon, you know, the whole nine yards, of course.
I think for the shift.
Some people think that a comet's going to come and destroy us. I mean, that the rapture is going to happen. You know, I mean, who knows? There's
Y2K.
So many theories.
Y2K.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, all over again, right? Yes, the end of the world is near.
That's funny that I...
Repent.
Yes. I said 2012 and I didn't connect up at all, but that's when the Mayan calendar ends. It's really interesting.
Yeah, just... abruptly ends right there.
But we are all making changes.
Because maybe with all of this change that we're going through right now is the process of us being asked.
We come into direct alignment with the galactic center on that day.
Galactic center.
It's called the Dark Rift.
Okay.
And, I mean, it's any body in the universe has an intense gravitational effect, you know, of some sort. And even a non... body. Like, the Dark Rift could be a huge black hole for all we know. We don't know. For all I know, I don't know. Maybe somebody does know, but I don't know. But I'm thinking that there is some kind of gravitational influence, because it seems that the closer we get, to me, I don't think this is just a product of being older and time going faster. I really feel like time is speeding up, and not just speeding up, but becoming denser, more compacted.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I look back on my day sometimes, and it's like, I got all that done, and it's already, and, you know, how did that happen,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
It just, it flew by, but then I got all these things done at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, and I not only hear older people and people my age and people a little younger than me saying time's going fast, I hear people who are, like, in their teens, you know, and kids. And I've never heard a kid say, wow, that passed really fast, or, you know, like
mm-hmm.
that weekend just flew by or whatever. I mean, yeah. how often do you hear kids say that? Usually a weekend to me lasted forever when I was a kid.
Are we there yet?
Right.
Forever. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it seems to me that everybody's kind of experiencing that on mm-hmm. some level. And that's why it's so much more important for us to be present and to experience every moment, you know, as deeply as we can.
Because I was just going to say, I mean, I think part of it may be that time is, in fact, moving faster. But it also could be the way that we're leading our lives, you know, nowadays.
Thank you.
It's just all about sort of immediacy and getting things done. And I, you know, for kids, it's, you know, pulling on what you were saying about kids, you know, with their access to the internet and this sort of obsession in the society for kids to be participating in every freaking extracurricular activity mm-hmm. under the moon mm-hmm. or the sun.
And the sheer wealth of information they're asked to process.
Exactly,
these days.
Especially with the advent of the internet,
gosh.
Because their fingertips, everything's at their fingertips.
Right.
So I mean, I look back when I was a kid, it's like, I mean, I had lots of downtime when I was reading mm-hmm. or just using my imagination mm-hmm. or looking for something to do or running around outside or what have you. Mm. And my schedule wasn't dictated to so much, you know, with all these activities and then the internet and, you know, Facebook and things like that.
I mean, when I was a kid, there were gangs of kids roaming the neighborhoods,
that's
you know,
what we,
all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
And I live in a neighborhood now and I never see children outside.
No.
So. Oh, no, it's like a whole different thing.
It's completely different.
And think about it when you get on, I mean, I don't know if this happens to me, I'll get on Facebook and it's like a half hour goes by and I felt like it's 5 minutes.
This mm-hmm. device here is a time suck muscle.
Yeah.
It's like a black hole for time. Mm-hmm. I have to agree with that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's why it's, you know, I mean, it's so important what we're doing, the work we're doing is to reconnect with that part of ourselves that that can get so easily lost in the hustle and bustle of everyday life.
Yeah,
absolutely. And in this time of the year as well, this is we're in winter, you know. Leaves have fallen off the trees, and yet right now is when the trees are growing their roots deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's going around. So the apanavai or the vata influences, the airy influences,
mm-hmm.
are very prevalent right now. So we have much more a tendency to become ungrounded.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to follow the example of the plants and the example, you know, of nature, and really try to get our grounded, our roots to grow deeper. And I find that during this time is when my practice deepens as well.
Yeah.
It really does. It's dark in the morning. It's quieter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Seems, and I want more to spend that time connecting myself.
And it feels so right at this time of year. I mean, it always feels right, but there's something about sort of going in the summer. I feel a lot more sort of external mm-hmm. or outgoing or in Seattle. I mean, I know we're so affected by the sunlight and all of that jazz, but there's something, you know, I like to burrow in the winter months and kind of be nesting and be cozy and be sort of internal mm-hmm. and that feeds into one's practice too, I think, mm-hmm. because you're a little bit more, you know, you're not outside as much, and you're focusing more on home, and home is nesting. Usually where your domestic soul is, right. And that's you, and so it feels like I have an ability to go a lot deeper, I think, in the winter months than in summer, in a way.
Yep. I agree. So, with all that said, as our little intro, let's put down the cookie for a second. Oh, no, not the cookie. Let's just sit back for a moment and kind of let ourselves come fully into our bodies, fully into our being, fully into connection with one another. So we begin to once again embark upon our shared journey of this exploration of one of the paths that we're following toward a connection, a deeper connection with our higher selves, our highest self, and toward also developing our outward manifestation of expression of that higher self, highest self, to the best of our abilities. Okay. Hey, it's been a couple months.
Yeah.
It has. But oh, she's completely out, just zonked. I love it. That is beautiful. That is so beautiful. That is really beautiful. You did a good job. Good job, Mommy.
You made a good baby.
You made a good baby. Wow. Or the meditation got her.
Yeah.
Good meditation. So, in our last, we left off I think we did 17 through 20 last time, and we were talking about types of attention or types of concentration, basically 17 and 18, and then we began to talk about the stages of our practice, or the types of practice, efforts and commitment of practice. So the types of concentration that we were talking about, you know, it went through in number 17.
Mm-hmm.
It went through stages of like going from outer to inner, from gross to subtle, going through the blissful period, that honeymoon stage, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then finally settling into just being. And then we also talked about the evolution of concentration and the evolution of that same equanimity coming through repeated practice of positive action,
right,
to erase some scars from past, maybe not so positive actions, and balancing out so in my own practice, I've had kind of a roller coaster ride in the last couple months, probably since we
have.
Yeah, as far as my physical well-being, I got a virus for a little while. I wasn't able to do the practice that I'm used to doing, you know. I like to do mantra in the morning, and I like to meditate, and those two things for a few weeks were completely out because I was either coughing too much to meditate for any length of time,
right,
or my throat was completely raw and I couldn't sing.
Oh my God.
You know? And so I had to rely on asana and on the carryover from the foundation that I'd laid previous to that. Interesting. Kind of residual, you know, energy from that to get me through those times.
Yeah.
And then last week, I think, I had a massive case of food poisoning.
Oh, yeah, right.
It was horrible. It was just awful. But I had a really neat kind of experience with it. You know, they have the WWJD, the What Would Jesus Do thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was like, WWYD, what would the yogi do? And I kept, even while I was completely just purging everywhere.
Every orifice.
Oh my God, it was horrible. I won't go into details. Spare you the details.
I've been there.
I have not been there.
It is miserable. Yeah. It is miserable.
I've helped my sister through it, and I've had mild cases.
This was absolutely horrendous. But not as bad as when I was in Mexico, but still very reminiscent of that time. And I kept trying to stay in my center even while I was being sick and reminding myself that this too is simply sensation. It's something my body is going through. I am not sick. My body is affected right now by a malign influence, but I am not sick.
Right.
So I really tried. I even in the midst of the heave-ho, I was I really tried to sit back and be and just notice what my body was going through, and it helped.
It really helped.
I really think that I seriously shortened the length of time that I would have been affected by it.
I bet you did. Yeah.
I'll never know for sure, but I believe that I did.
Well, and if nothing else,
and
at
I
least
bounced
you
back
comforted
fast.
Yourself. I mean, it probably made it an easier process to sort of recognize that, to separate yourself, detach from it. It's kind of like when we talk about detaching ourselves from things in day to day lives, not identifying ourselves with these things,
right?
Material things or sickness.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's fascinating.
Pain, pleasure, all of it. And the samskaras we were talking about, the latent impressions. So these can be built up by experiences like traumatic experiences or anything that affects us and when we react to. And what our practice teaches us to do is that at first we have like etchings in rock, okay? So we're drawing lines in granite. You can't get very deep, right?
Right.
But they're hard to erase. All right. So even though it's all very surface, we're not affected very deeply by it, but we're affected very
permanently,
not necessarily permanently, but very indelibly, almost indelibly by it. And then as we begin to practice more, then it becomes more like drawing a line in soft sand. You can get a little deeper, right? But then the line is also more easily erased, more easily, you know, obscured or taken away. And then it's like drawing a line in water. So you can get really deep. You experience everything very intensely. But it almost goes away immediately. Right? And then I've heard it say eventually it becomes like drawing a line in the air.
Oh, wow.
You can go all the way through. You experience it to the core of your being and beyond. But then it's gone. So that's the detachment. You know, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So even though I experience the illness because I have an aversion to it, I don't let myself experience it as fully you know, I try to push it away. I try to block it out.
Yeah.
Well, it's the, you know,
but
getting
that
caught
blocking
up
affects me even deeper.
Yeah, right. It's getting caught up in like the rejection.
That gets, yeah, and that gets me. Yeah. So it draws a deeper, it draws a more permanent line.
Yeah.
It affects me longer.
Right.
Yeah. Because you know? It's more painful.
I don't let myself go through it all the way.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And our practice teaches us to experience intensely everything we experience,
mm-hmm.
and be acutely aware of everything we're experiencing. But then when it's done, it's done.
Right.
Move on. And so that's...
Or move through it.
Or move
I think
through.
Some things,
yeah, move through. Absolutely.
You know, can be painful.
Absolutely.
And have residual pain that you really do have to work through.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
You have those two things that, yeah, it can be erased. It can be erased.
Yeah, it can always be erased. And that's what our practice is teaching us to do. Is to erase those lines we've drawn and drawn and drawn and drawn. And eventually everything just comes up to the surface.
Yeah.
Bubbles up. More stuff. And as we lose one thing, something else comes up that was underneath that. And then that goes away. And then something deeper comes up, you know, and that goes away. And of course these things are always going to be, as we experience these deep-seated samskaras, these really, really deep ones, it can be painful. It can be, you know, it can be traumatic. The trick is to let ourselves experience that so that we can move through it.
Mm-hmm.
We can move through it and then be done with it.
Close it.
Close it out. Yeah, closure. Find closure from it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's an amazing thing. It really is. There was something else I wanted to say too. I always got something else to say, don't I? Oh, there was another thing that it kind of started to come in. It'll come back, I'm sure. So have you guys, what have you guys been doing for any kind of practice lately? Anything?
Yeah, I've done yoga a couple times, twice, with her, actually. It's like a postnatal yoga.
So and asana yoga.
Yes, some asana. But actually, the last postnatal class that I took, the teacher was talking about how with a baby, it is harder to do asana because the time and everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, to really concentrate on breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing through things, and I've definitely been doing that.
So that's been your practice lately? Is
yes.
Your breath?
Because nice. She, you know, she can bring up a lot of anxiety
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
I mean, just even, like, changing a diaper sometimes, like, she's, like, flipping out, you know. And I just have to I have to change a diaper. That's my job, right? So I can't let her get in the way of that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
she's almost like she's kind of getting in the way of her own
well-being,
comfort.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm.
So it's kind of crazy. But I do, I've been breathing,
good.
And I count, so I count to like 6 or 8,
good.
And 6 or 8 out, and it's kind of interesting, two
so
things.
Measured breath.
Measured yes. breath has been my practice, and it's helped
beautiful.
Me stay calm and focused, and it's also made me realize actually how short those times are, like the changing of the diaper, maybe it's like 3 minutes maximum,
yeah.
but when I'm feeling like anxiety over it, it feels like 20 minutes. Like, oh my god,
totally.
This is never gonna end.
Totally. Yeah.
But with the counting, I realized, okay, that was 8 seconds. Okay, that's 16 seconds. Okay, so 24. I mean, it's really like 2 minutes. Yeah, and it doesn't have
not
to
so
be
bad.
Painful. Yeah. No. So breath has been important for me.
Nice. That's
yeah.
beautiful. It's something so simple and yet
yeah.
so amazingly helpful.
It's always there. You know, I don't have to set aside time
that's
for
right.
it because
yeah.
it's
don't
just
pack
there.
It up. Don't
no,
you can't forget it.
Yes,
laying on the coffee
can't.
Table.
Like you can't pass time. Yeah. Yeah, breath is there.
Nobody's
going
to look at you weird
yeah.
if you whip it out on the bus.
Yeah. No electricity needed.
That's right. Can't run out of power. That's right.
No.
And
I have not been doing enough for practice lately because I've felt so sort of. I think I've just felt overwhelmed by everything that's coming my way, and I feel like every day I'm trying to get through all these sort of little things that I'm trying to take care of.
Why are you getting through them? There's...
Well, I mean, in a way...
We spoke about practice. Practice doesn't have to look like asana or meditation.
I mean, I haven't been practicing, like, asana as much lately, but I am still... but I have been, doing exercise, which always helps me kind of soothe myself, but I would say breathing, though, too, because with all of this change and everything that's coming... Mm-hmm. my way, and then I also have had anxiety related issues before, and I can see myself being able to just like ground myself in this process and as I was saying to you guys before we started, with all of this change, I think recognizing what I need in order to feel comfortable with all of the change and sort of taking time to honor that and so that's been really good. And just in terms of getting through, I've just sort of been, I think, you know, with all this change, I think you can feel like you need to attack everything at once. And I've been really good about just taking things, you know, for example, wedding planning. Yeah. And some people say that, oh, there was like a huge push at the beginning and then you take a break for a while and then there's another push later when you send out invitations. But what I found that works really well for both Kevin and me is for us to... We're just, you know, every weekend or every week, we kind of just try to take care of one thing.
Oh, nice.
And then we can focus on that one thing, you know. Perfect. Like one weekend was just our meeting with the florist, and we were able to just give her the attention that we, that we were just able to absorb everything and not be running around all weekend long from, you know, a million different vendors looking at a million different things. So I think that's how I've been getting through all of the change, is sort of recognizing that for me, what works is just little bites at it, but every day or every couple of days, and that gives me sort of a sense of...
That's an incredible practice.
That is great.
That's a wonderful practice.
Well,
Absolutely.
It's focus. Yeah. I mean,
it's to
really
pace
good.
Yourself and to take just step-by-step approach.
And,
how many people do that?
Yeah.
I mean, really.
It's true.
I'm
not going to be able to pray.
You really are.
I'm giving each thing the attention it deserves.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
The presence.
And it allows you realize, we both come to realize that it allows us to actually, like, we're really enjoying the wedding planning now because it's fun.
Fun
we don't
nice.
Feel like every decision has to be made because we're just sort of staying on it progressively. And, you know, we're just, it was funny, we left the florist. He's like, I thought I was going to hate that, but I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Cool.
So it's been, I have to say, because at the beginning when we first got engaged, I kind of went a little bit berserk, thinking like just overwhelmed by the to-do list and thinking, oh my gosh.
That's why I eloped.
Yeah. And I can be a person that wants to get everything done right away
right
and get it off my plate. Mm-hmm. And you realize that by doing that, you actually lose part of the process.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
So.
And you lose the experience of being, of the whole journey, of the whole, of everything.
Totally.
All the things along the way.
Yeah.
It's like rushing into a yoga posture and trying to get to that perfect shape in space.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We miss all of the nuances of what our body is, of what's happening.
And letting our body adjust.
Exactly.
To that perfect shape.
Or letting that perfect shape adjust to our body.
Right. So it's the same with adjusting to this new role.
We're not listening to the fact that this hip maybe doesn't want to turn out quite that much.
Yeah.
So let's shift over this way and see if we can't maybe give it a little bit more length.
Yeah.
And instead, it's like, make it happen, you know. So.
And I think it kind of goes back to what you're saying about the detachment. You know, I think sometimes we want to force things or fight things, you know, that sort of... that resistance that creates that block, because I know in past moments of my life where I was going through a significant amount of change, though I would argue not nearly as much as I'm going through right now in one fell swoop, I was just very get it all done. And afterwards, a year or two after that phase of change, I definitely struggled on an emotional level because I realized that trying to knock something out like that, you're not going through the emotional steps of the process that you need to go through to honor the change and honor how it's impacting you and sort of being in touch with yourself and how you feel about it. And you, if you don't deal with it as you're going through it, it will come back.
Right.
To haunt bite you in the butt.
Yeah.
Right.
And big time.
Yeah, worse, because now you can't fix it. I mean, you just have to, like, process it all over again.
And you're less in touch.
Right. And it takes longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you
and
have
then
to
there's
undo.
Regret on top of it. Like, yeah. It's not good.
No, it's not
yes,
good.
Yes, absolutely.
Been there.
Yeah.
So that is a perfect. Vitarka Vichara Ananda Asmita Rupa Anugamat Sangpranyataha. Sangpranyataha. So that's beautiful. That's 117. Beautiful illustration of going from gross to subtle to the bliss to just being. You have the wedding plan, big gross thing, big huge, not gross, but large.
Yeah.
Gross isn't large. And then you have more subtle. You have the details
right.
that you're experiencing. And actually, you're finding bliss now in that. It's becoming fun.
Right.
Fun.
Right.
And the end culmination is that you're just going to be able to enjoy it. You're going to be able to be there.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to be fully present with your guests.
Yes. Yeah.
Fully present with each other. You know?
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful,
yeah,
it's a beautiful
it.
Illustration
yeah.
of this entire development of
yeah.
attention, of being able to be attentive to everything that's going on
yeah.
during the process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No.
That was awesome.
Thank you for
yeah.
opening my eyes to the fact
yeah.
that I have been practicing.
Yeah. You have been practicing. And very well, I might
thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my Sanskrit still isn't amazing, but it's getting a little better.
Awesome.
I'm working with a wonderful teacher, Gina Salah, and she's helped me out quite a bit.
That's great.
Absolutely. So that's gross to subtle, and we talked about 118. Eyes are getting worse and worse. Mridu Matya Madhya Adhimatratvat. Tatahapi Vishishaha. So.
Is that a hard sound to get used to?
Well, there's two S's. The S with the accent aigu on the top, and with the S with the little dot on the bottom. So the one with the accent on the top is a sh, like we're used to saying.
Yeah.
The one with the dot on the bottom is a sh.
Yeah,
it's way back in the back of the
we
mouth.
Don't have a sound like that in English.
No.
Do we?
And then when you have to switch from one to the other, it's like
sheshu.
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 Yeah.
Talk about
and
the,
they all,
the intricate, like, for going.
All of the sounds have an energetic effect.
Oh.
Yeah. A specific energetic effect.
Hmm.
So it's, and I'm not familiar with those yet.
Yeah.
I just know that they do. And that's all I need to know right now. Apparently. Until I can do them. So the first, the goal is near for the, oh wait a minute, that's, no. Oh, I'm sorry. I was on the wrong one. So Vitarka Vichara Ananda Asmitarupa Anugamat Sangpranyata. And then 118, Virama Pratyaya Abhyasa Purvaha Sanskara Shishraha Anya. So, yes. 117, practice and detachment, develop four times the samadhi. Self-analysis, synthesis, bliss, and the experience of pure being, which is what we were just talking about
mm-hmm.
with your wedding. And the void arising in these experiences is another samadhi. Hidden impressions lie dormant but spring up during moments of awareness, creating fluctuations and disturbing the purity of consciousness. So that's Iyengar. I'm sorry, I read yours, didn't I?
Oh, that's okay.
Are we doing the readings?
Yeah, well, we're doing everything backwards today for some reason.
That's fine.
So,
there you go.
Yeah.
Right, it is coming.
The other kind of samadhi is asampranyata samadhi, and has no object in which attention is absorbed. This is Swamiji. Wherein only latent impressions remain. Attainment of this state is preceded by the constant practice of allowing all of the gross and subtle fluctuations of the mind to recede back into the field from which they arose. So, this is where we practice good action, right action, and just allow all of that to balance out. So the practice isn't on any particular object, but it's just on, or it's just on practice itself, on good action. So, what's a good analogy for that? So this is without seed, sabija. So in the first one, we have the type of concentration is one where we use mantra, we use mandala, we use a flame, we use the breath, we use attention to details, you know, subtle to gross, all that, you know, like we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is where we're just letting go. Letting go intentionally. Instead of using something to divert the attention, mm-hmm. we just allow the attention to become absorbed in everything. And I don't know if I'm really describing that very well.
Well, it's sort of tough to describe, I think, isn't it? It seems sort of yeah.
It is really. I mean, we can think of it as sitting quietly, but not really. It's not just being quiet. It's being absorbed in everything, all at once, and yet not letting any of it. Not being reactive to any of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's very hard sometimes.
It's almost impossible.
Yeah, no,
it's
mean,
almost
really.
Impossible. As a thought arises, let it be just a thought. Let it just float away.
Well, and this reminds me of what came up for me here is just family dynamics during the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And just letting, you know, being able to just let personalities or different...
That's good. Yeah.
That you don't necessarily get along with.
it's just a backflip off your lap.
She has not done that in such a long time. She used to do it. Newborns do that.
Oh my god.
And it's scary. Yeah. They hurl themselves and you're like, whoa.
You have not done that in so long.
But that's really good. So not letting whatever happens, and I'm going to have to practice this myself with my dear, beloved mother. I love her so
much.
They're
tough,
bless
though.
Her heart.
Yeah, they can be tough.
Not attaching any thought of her doing anything intentionally or saying anything intentionally.
Right.
You know, even if she is, I have to not allow that reaction to manifest in myself.
I find that difficult.
Very, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Especially with mothers.
Right.
Oh my gosh. With anyone you love.
Anybody, but there's something about somebody said once, a psychologist said, you know, if it weren't for mothers, I would be out of business. But I think we, as children growing up, and I think often look to our mothers, and it's different. I don't want to generalize too extensively, but I think we look to them for a lot of our identity because they are the ones who tell us mm-hmm. from. And I guess it's true for both parents, but from a very early stage, they see certain characteristics in us that they, my daughter is a total, you know, jokester, or she's really into this, or she's into that.
Labels.
And we hear these labels, and it's sort of a nature versus nurture thing. I mean, maybe we exhibit some of those characteristics early in our life, but maybe that's not who we really, truly will become, and...
Right.
And then it's a sort of cognitive or it's a sort of form of dissonance, I think, when a parent mm-hmm. sees you acting in a way that's outside of what they assumed you to be.
Right.
And there's just a lot of tension and conflict in those relationships
mm-hmm.
sometimes. And I don't know. I know a lot of people that I've spoken to. I don't know about you guys, but when you go home, you sort of feel like you're reverting to your childhood roles.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I think it's because we sort of have this natural tendency to, like, not want to create this dissonance for our parents. And if they assume that we're, when you tell your parents you're into something new or different, sometimes you're like, oh, mm-hmm. weird. Right. They just don't really want to, I don't know.
No, it's but true.
Well, it's like my mother, she said to me the other day, she goes, you're really into this yoga. And I'm like, well, Mom, it saved my life. It is my life.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, well.
Oh, well. Like, it's like this negative thing.
Yeah, I was telling my mom about yoga and Zumba and all these other things that I love to do that are, and I guess I didn't think about it. She's like, gosh, she's like, I think it's quite, you're quite cultish, honestly, aren't you? You're into cults, I think. She's like, you get to do all these group-oriented activities. And I'm like,
Is she English or Irish?
Yeah, she's Danish, but she has a British accent. But I thought about it.
Your mother.
Cult is not the word I would like to use. But I have learned, actually, and I'm like, I'm not going to apologize for it, but I get a certain energy out of being in group settings for exercise and athletics, and she's more of a, well, she rode crew, and I think that she enjoyed, but she's a runner, and I don't know, but that's the other thing. She knows what it feels like to row crew, but she just couldn't really relate it to me, and you're just like, okay, Mom, I mean, and you're not going to, and that's sort of the detachment. I think when you're younger, you'd be like, you don't understand me, and da-da-da, and I've always had it, you know, I've never fought my mom in those things, because I just, you know, you just realize they see what they see, and that's okay, and you don't need to change it, and you can detach and say, she just doesn't know, and she doesn't know my world, and that's, she doesn't need to know my world.
Yeah.
I would like to, but, you know.
But, but she's not going to.
Yeah.
And then it gets, I mean, it's even harder with parenting decisions now that I'm a mom.
Yeah.
With my mom, and, like, for, you know, I was raised Catholic, and so my mom was Catholic.
My mom, too.
Yeah.
But I wasn't raised that way.
Oh,
I wasn't raised.
Oh, that's interesting.
My dad was Methodist. Okay. So they didn't want the...
combined.
They didn't want to have to fight over who was going to be the predominant influence or whatever, so they just...
tossed it, which is probably good. Yeah. Because my mom was like, so are you going to baptize Fiona? And I was like, well, what do you think? No, I'm not, you know, I'm not Catholic. And she was just like, didn't
I was christened.
Yeah, I was baptized too. Yeah.
So I wasn't, even, but.
Yeah, but things like. I know, right? Yeah.
Out of here. You guys should be out of here. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. You're doomed. You're doomed.
But just with that decision, hope for you. It's like my mom has known since I was in high school that I didn't consider myself to want to follow the
Catholic tradition.
Yeah, and she's always been the kind of person that she'd be like, "Well, you'll grow out of it. You'll see. You'll come back to the church."
Yeah,
and I'm like, so I think she thought,
"Well, that you have."
Yeah, right. I've got my own beliefs.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's weird. It's like she. I think my mom is the kind of person who thought that I would just become who she thinks I am. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what a lot of moms do.
I think most mothers
do
like that.
Okay.
And for the most part. And look, the fact of the matter is, we may end up doing the same thing, and it's a cycle. Yeah. And I'd like to not, and I'd like to try not to, but. And I think there's the earlier stages in life where we fight that so much with our parents. And now there's a point that I've reached where, and again, I didn't really fight it so much, but I saw my sister fight it a lot with my mom, and it created so much tension. But at the end of the day, like, you realize that they're the product of their experience. You just kind of, you let
that's
go.
Right. They only have what they know to work with.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we only have what we know to work with.
Yeah.
But we know... and we realize and we're aware, and maybe that will help us to break any cycles.
Yes, I believe
that's
that.
What I hope. And I do. Sometimes I wish that, you know, sometimes there were more mothers out there who would do yoga or, you know, read these sorts of scriptures and philosophies, because I think this is what has broken cycles for me in a lot of respects. And I think that level of self-awareness or just taking time to observe these things, which... so few people ever take time to do.
Right. True. And I know so we true. Probably all, we all know this from experience, but because it's such hard work.
It is.
You know? And I think some people just can't be bothered or don't want to be bothered.
And it's scary, too, I think, for some people. You know,
oh,
it's just,
right.
If they don't love themselves enough to want to enter this process and try to examine all
and
these
take
things.
The responsibility. Once we admit the knowledge of it, then we have the responsibility to change it, to do something about it.
Right? So, and that's actually the hard part.
And so that's, I think that is a deterrent for quite a few people to admit
that's
anything to
point.
As well.
Yeah.
I know the other night in Kirtan, Gina asked us to, because we sing out our name and then we sing out whatever. And that night she asked us to sing out something that we wanted to manifest in ourselves.
Yeah.
And what came out of me was, I hope to show the tolerance that I seek.
Oh.
I hope to be able to show the tolerance that I seek. And that's just it. It's, I really want an accepting, tolerant attitude from my mother, from my, the rest of my family is pretty good about it, but especially from my mother. I mean, I want her to be proud of me, and I want her to accept what I'm doing, and to feel like it's something that's good for me, and that I'm on a good path,
yeah,
you know,
right.
And I'm not going to be damned to eternal hell because I'm not, you know,
right.
You know, I don't take Jesus as my savior and all that good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I have to also at the same time remember to show her
tolerance.
The tolerance.
Absolutely.
For her beliefs. And
yeah.
Maybe if she can't, if it's too difficult for her to come to grips with, to accept that.
Right.
Somehow.
Right. And it's, I think it goes back to the detachment, because I think a lot of times it, our initial reaction can feel hurt. Why don't you want to accept what I'm doing, even if it's different than some, than your path? Why don't you want to accept or try to understand or support and encourage me if it's something that's so positive?
Yeah.
But it's that sort of detachment from identifying with it. So your mother doesn't understand your path that you've chosen, and, you know, and maybe my mom doesn't in some ways too. I don't know exactly, but instead of identifying with that and feeling hurt by it, just knowing that that's her, and that's, she's coming from a perspective, and that I don't need to attach to it.
Right.
It doesn't need to impact how I see myself or how I identify with my path.
And I also don't need to try to change her.
Exactly.
Right.
I really don't. And exactly. I think that's where I've been. Like, I bought a book for her that was a... There's a book on weekly meditations on passages from the Bible and the Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, right.
But I don't think it open.
Yeah, I really don't. So yeah. I just kept it for myself.
That was probably a good idea, because you save yourself rejection.
I'm trying to change. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. Because what?
And I'm also just bringing that whole subject up again.
Right.
You know? And it's just like, if you think about, really, for me. My friends who are Christians who I know would love to proselytize or, you know, to help me see the light or what have you, I don't appreciate that sentiment. And I feel
exactly.
like I know.
Exactly.
And so really it's
the
no
flip side. Exactly.
Way.
It's right. It's no different. So,
true.
So I just kept it for myself.
Yeah.
That was smart.
Okay. So we need to get through these next two real quick.
One last thing I want to say.
Yes, absolutely.
It
please.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw it on a TV show, but it was, like, really helpful. This one character was going to see a therapist, and she was talking about how she was having a disagreement with someone. I don't remember. I think it was a relative. And they came to the realization, like, you're, in this case, like, your mom is a table, and you're expecting her to be a chair.
I like it.
Oh, wow, I love it.
She's a table.
Love it.
Yeah.
And you just have to remember, like, you're if you're expecting this person
to be something...
Yeah, that they're not. You're going to be constantly disappointed.
And I mean, you look at most failed relationships around you, or the ones that I've been in, that's always been the issue, is somebody's been expecting the other person to be something that they're not, and that's never going to work.
Because
people don't change.
No.
I mean, they can on their own path, but they don't change because we want them to.
Right, right.
And it creates, I think that's the source of a lot of tension in any relationship.
All we can do is live our lives to the best of our own ability.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to the greatest service to our highest selves. And when we do that, we serve others as well,
mm-hmm.
to the best of our ability. And hope that that in itself has some beneficial influence on those around us, you know?
Yeah.
And they can maybe hopefully see that what we're doing is... These are beautiful. Hopefully see that what we're doing is good.
Yeah.
Is positive.
Yeah.
And so when someone does something that we disagree with or sounds crazy, like, to just... What do you think?
Well, I mean, we have a responsibility if there's somebody beating up somebody, you know, if there's a robber beating up an old woman, taking her purse, you know, I mean, we have a responsibility to do what we can to help. of course.
Yeah.
At the same time, we don't know the whole history behind why that person did that.
Right.
So to make judgments.
Maybe it was their purse and they're taking it back.
You never know, you know. We can't make judgments while we're doing these things. So we do what we feel in our heart is right to do, but to make judgment calls and to feel righteous in doing it, that's where we build some scars once again. That's where we again deepen our, that's because we're reacting.
Right.
We're reacting. Instead of taking action, right action, you know, to the best of our knowledge, when we begin to react, and then it just throws everything off.
No reaction.
That makes sense?
Yes. To kind of quell the reacting.
Yeah, quell the reacting.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So, the number 19, where are my glasses? They're on my head,
of course.
Yours,
Anna? Is that yours?
Yeah.
Place savers.
Okay. Bhava pratyaya. Bhava pratyaya, huh? Videha pratikrilayaram. Pratikrilayanam. So, in this state, one may experience bodilessness or become merged in nature. So, these are the ones we were talking about. Mm-hmm. The pratikrilayanams, the ones who are born either with this centeredness, this already tendency or ability to become, to go into samadhi, like people like Gandhi or Jesus or Ramakrishna, all these great saints. Some, it says in Swami Jay, some who have attained higher levels, videyas, or know unmanifest nature, pratikrilayas, are drawn into birth in this world by the remaining latent impressions of ignorance, and more naturally come to these states of samadhi. So they may have a few little last bits of karma that they need to clear up.
Mm.
You know, so they're reborn. They're born into this body,
onto
this earth. But they already have. They're already pretty much there. They have enough positive action built up that they've almost completely balanced out all the.
And that's from a series of lives.
It's from a series of lives, or perhaps they're also celestials.
Okay.
You know, who for whatever reason, I don't know if celestials ever get born into human form, but. Well, I guess, I mean, if Jesus was supposedly a celestial born into human form.
Oh, really? Interesting.
By choice, though. He gave my choice. So I think there was a little bit of a difference there. It wasn't because he had any bad karma. That I know of. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or for whatever reason they're here. For whatever reason they're here. They're more able to come into that state of samadhi. That state of centeredness. And we talked about, but for the rest of us, right? And I guess they just mentioned those because people go, well, what about, you know, so-and-so? He didn't seem to have a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's because he was one of those. So, 120, Shraddha, oh yeah, I love this one, Virya, Smriti, Samadhi Prajna, Purvakaha Itaresham. So, this is, others follow a fivefold systematic path of faithful certainty on the path, directing energy toward the practices, repeated memory of the path, and the process of stilling the mind, training in deep concentration, and the pursuit of real knowledge by which the higher samadhi, asampranyata samadhi, is attained. So that's Shraddha is faith. Virya, remember Virabhadrasana, Virasana, heroic action, courage, Smriti, memory, remembering our practice and the beneficial effects we've had and having that foundation like when I was sick.
Oh, yeah,
know, yeah. So my Smriti was what got me through those times. You know, having that memory, that foundation that I'd laid to draw upon.
Right.
during the harder times.
Yep.
And samadhi, the centeredness which comes of it. Absolutely. So it's having the faith that we're moving in the right direction and having the courage to keep moving in that direction, even though we have people like mom or whoever, you know, going, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's not the way to heaven.
To just keep going.
To just keep going. Yeah, because the memories of what you've done before, you know that it's working for you.
Right.
Right.
So memory feeds the faith.
Memory feeds the faith. Faith feeds the courage. Courage feeds, supports all of it. Yeah. Right? It everything feeds on, it all feeds each other. And then that more and more and more and more brings us to our center.
Yeah.
More brings us to happy equanimity.
Yes.
Blissful
which
equanimity.
Which is what we're seeking.
It's what everyone is seeking, really. It's really whatever. We're just seeking to find that fullness. And we need to learn that we have it in ourselves already. It's there.
Yeah.
We lack for nothing.
Right.
There's nothing that we need.
No.
It's all provided.
Yeah.
Right here inside. And we get so caught up in thinking that we're separate, that we're incomplete.
Yeah.
And we start reaching outside to try to fill those holes that we perceive. And all the while, you know, we could just be filling it in instead of trying to fill it up.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Right. That's a good way to look at it.
Hi, baby.
And that's by going subtler and subtler and seeing where we can kind of stretch here and spread there and, you know, expand here and lengthen there and finally get it all the spaces covered. That makes sense?
Speaking of strengthening and lengthening, are you going to be not having class next Thursday?
Class will be had next Thursday. I won't be having
Dr.
class.
Jim or somebody?
Dr. Jim will be here.
Dr. Jim?
Yeah.
I've never
Jim.
Experienced him.
He's pretty cool guy. Yeah.
He is.
Yeah, he's very knowledgeable.
Yeah.
He's very knowledgeable in Ayurveda, too, which is something I want to explore when I go to India.
Yeah.
All right, so we need to wrap up this segment because it is getting late.
Yes.
What time is it?
It is 5:19, ladies.
So we're going to have a short little...
And that's good because we're going on only to the next two sutras. And they are not very... Well, I mean, they can be as complex as we want to make them, I suppose. All right. So this concludes the first half of our discussion today. Namaste, and thank you all for your wonderful and inspiring contributions. We're going to pause for a quick break, and then when we return, we will pick up with the next two sutras of the Samadhi Pada. And Fiona says bye.
Yes!